And country and supporting Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.
On last week's Wait Wait, Paula Poundstone reacted to a suggestion that a great way to meet the locals while traveling is to go to McDonald's.
I mean, if you're really trying to meet the locals, why not go to their DMV?
I'm Peter Sagal. If you want to get the pulse of this country, tune into this week's news quiz with special guest taxidermist to the stars, Amber Maycutt. Get stuffed with Wait Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we introduce you to a dynamite saxophonist at the forefront of a rising generation, Emmanuel Wilkins.
We are the generation that is refining what generations before us opened the door for.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Hortonville, New York resident Matthew Dempsey, who first appeared on the show in 2019. So to recap, Matthew is from Jamestown, North Dakota, and in that first appearance on Catskill Character, he shared about his journey from North Dakota to New York City, his path to sobriety, finishing his BA and going on to get his MBA, his love of motorcycles, and landing his dream job as the general manager of the Dillon Hotel in New York City. Today we're going to take a closer look at Matthew's world travels on a motorcycle and at the big changes happening at the Dillon Hotel. Matthew's going to discuss how, as a general manager, he has negotiated these changes. We're going to touch upon the idea of perspective and how your own perspective impacts your life. Let's get to it. Matthew, welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm so very happy you were able to join me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'd like to start off by asking you to share your travels. Some trips you've done alone, of course, and some with your brother, John. All of these trips have been on motorcycles. Before we begin, let's remind the listener how your adventures with your brother started. It involved recovery from grief and motorcycles.
Correct. You know, I grew up in North Dakota, little kid, and I wanted a driver's license. They said, you can't have a car license, but you can get a motorcycle license at 14. I said, okay, that's what I'll do. And I got one. Bought an old motorcycle out of a friend's garage for a couple $100 and went on, lived my life. And I got a motorcycle again, ended up going through divorce. And my motorcycle was really an important part of my finding some peace and serenity in a lot of chaos. And then all of a sudden, my brother found himself going through a divorce as well. And I said, look, so you can either get a therapist or you can get a motorcycle. And I said, at least at the end, you'd have something if you bought a motorcycle. So he bought a motorcycle. And started, yes, out of grief, but then we started riding together and we've gone a lot of really great places and we're close. Riding with one's brother is an amazing experience.
So there's been trips to Peru. You did that with John. I know you also been to Nova Scotia, Thailand, the Alps, the Atlas Mountains, all on motorcycles, right?
Correct.
So how does this happen? You fly to wherever it is you're going, and do you rent motorcycles, or do you have friends that live there that loan you their motorcycles? How does it work?
I rent motorcycles. Every place you go in the world, everybody's on motorcycles, so you can rent them. And sometimes it's somebody that has a few motorcycles that rents them out of a garage. If you go to Europe, you can Hertz, you can rent a car, or you can rent a motorcycle. And away you go.
Have you ever arrived at a place, gotten your motorcycle, and it was bad?
Yes, my first solo trip around Morocco was what should have been a great motorcycle. It was a good Yamaha Tenere, but it had over 100,000 kilometers on it.
Oh, no.
And So I made him like change a tire, and it wouldn't start, and it didn't have gas, and a couple of things. I was like, oh, this is a bad start to a big solo trip in a country I've never been to. And but you know, motorcycles really are simple machines. So once I got him to get it in good running shape, then I took off.
Oh, that's good. Well, let's get to the specifics of at least one of your trips. Let's start with the headwaters of the Amazon. Tell us about that trip.
So we flew into Lima, and so I talked my brother into it. Was like his birthday, and I said, John, I'll rent you a motorcycle. Let's go to Peru. And so we did, and we rented motorcycles there, and these were very used motorcycles, but they were good. And so we headed off, and we went up to the Andes, rode through the Andes, and then we came out of the Andes into basically kind of jungle. So it's raining and it's hot and steamy, so you can't see out of your helmet really. And then we're in the mountains, and you know, it's not like the US where there's guardrails and things like that. Basically, it's a dirt road that goes down the side of a mountain. And so that was one part of it. It's cold in the Andes, and then it was hot and steamy. And then we got to the Upocalpa, which is the headwaters of the Amazon, and it's totally great.
Now, when we say headwaters, that's the place where three different rivers are feeding into one, correct?
Right. The floodplain on the east side of the Andes.
And this is called the Apacheta Valley, where you were.
Right. Correct.
It sounds, you know, I know it must have been really thrilling and exciting, but it sounds like a lot of work to me. You're sweating, you're freezing. I guess you were a rugged adventurer. I guess that's what I would call you.
You are probably right. Definitely on motorcycle, much different than a car. There was no heat or air conditioning or wipers or doors or roof. No cup holder, obviously. And so it's a much more physical experience. But, you know, that's really the fantastic part of it, that as you're riding through someplace, you can feel the humidity and the smells, and just you're right there. You're not protected by metal or glass as you're traveling through these amazing places.
Mm. What's it like when you're traveling alone on one of these trips versus when you're going with John?
Of course, it's always nice to have backup, especially when you're on a motorcycle. So it's easy to make a quick getaway. Definitely when I travel alone, I'm very aware of what's going on. But, you know, there'll be times pull up someplace, grab something to eat, and maybe I'll see some shady characters that I think that's not such a good place to pull into and hang out for any amount of time. So it's just being very aware. And when you ride a motorcycle, you're very aware anyways, because, you know, cars and trucks and animals and all kinds of things are usually trying to get in your way or bounce you off your bike. So it's all part of the vigilance of riding.
Oh, that makes me think about what was the most dangerous thing that's ever happened to you when you were on one of these trips? As far as, like you said, shady characters. So I was wondering if you ever had any altercations with some shady characters.
No, not really. We've had altercations with some shady food. That's probably about as close as that. And really, it's like, you know, if you live in New York or if you grow up as a gay kid, you know when there's danger and when to get out of someplace or when not to be someplace. Mm-hmm. So, but you also are a good character of knowing when someplace is safe and no issue. So more it's the roads that will be the interesting part of a trip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned to me when we first spoke about this that when you're on a mountain, I mean, you're on a mountain, okay? And then you're on top of the mountain on top of a bike. And you told me it's like chaos on top of chaos. Let's talk about that.
Yes. Well, you know, the first terrifying experience I ever had exactly similar was being on top of a horse on a trail on top of a mountain out in Montana. I was like, this is terrifying. Mm. So, but a horse isn't going to isn't going to fall down, right? Horse is going to keep a horse safe. And if you're on top of the horse, okay, you're in good shape. Motorcycle is a little bit different because, you know, one, I do not like heights, and it's kind of vertigo where I always feel if I'm too close to something that I'm definitely going to go flying down the mountain. I don't know if it's that I think there's extra gravity that's going to grab me and pull me down, but, you know, it's on top of a motorcycle. So you have to maintain balance and you have to maintain speed, and it's a manual transmission. So you have to, you know, stay in gear and at the right speed, maintain balance and see what's going on. But ultimately, on top of that, you have to have a clear mind so that you can ride without freaking out. So a lot of it is, you know, starting the day of just letting go of all of my fears and trepidations, really, so that I can be clear-minded, open for whatever experiences are going to happen on the road. This is always something interesting, but also so that I'm physically and mentally in top shape for riding through the Atlas or the Alps or the Andes Mountains, because it's, you know, it's a physical experience.
Mm. Yeah, that's so interesting to me that you have a fear of heights, and yet you've been to the Andes, the Alps, and the Atlas Mountains. And I was wondering, doing that, what about your perspective about heights and fear changed?
Well, I'm still not a fan of heights, but I guess it's more just really understanding that I know how to ride a motorcycle. There is no extra gravity that's going to snatch me off, and that all kinds of people are doing the exact same thing on either smaller bikes or bigger, junkier vehicles. So I should be fine.
You know, what you're really getting at, Matthew, is how to deal with your fears. And I don't know if you heard my show a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to Charles Wilkin, the beekeeper, and he talked about how when you step to the hive, you have to just take a moment, take a deep breath, and let go of everything, all of your fears and your worries, because the bees will know. So you just have to let it go. And I'm a bit claustrophobic. I guess you would tell me to do the same thing when I'm in a situation where I'm feeling that fear of being closed in, to just let things go. Let it go.
It's tough. If you can set aside your fear for a few minutes to give yourself some calm, and then if you can keep setting aside your fear for another few minutes, you can pretty much make it through whatever you are afraid of.
Yeah. It takes practice, like anything else.
Yes.
And I guess the more trips that you go on, not that you'll necessarily ever not be afraid of heights, but the way you handle it will get better and better.
Right. And really, you know, riding a motorcycle is fantastic. And it's that freedom and experience of adventure is totally worth, you know, a little bit of uncomfort of my own malfunction, you know, perspective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so if you could just keep one memory from all of your trips, what would you keep?
Memory that I would keep is that feeling of getting off of the motorcycle after a day of riding, wherever I've been, and just being, I can't believe I did that today, or I saw that.
So you would hold on to your sense of accomplishment and wonder.
Definitely.
Huh, I love that. I think this is a great time to take a break. You've been listening to Catskill Character with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest, Matthew Dempsey. We'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm Angela Page. I do a show called Folk Plus, 2 o'clock on Sundays. And if you want to hear clever lyrics, memorable melodies, all wound around one theme, check out my show Folk Plus. You can listen to last week's show at the Folk Plus page on WJFF's website, or catch it in real time, 2 o'clock on Sundays.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, experience the transformative possibilities of poetry with United States Poet Laureate Ada Limón. She's the author of 6 collections and one of Time Magazine's 12 Women of the Year for 2024. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, my guest today is Matthew Dempsey, who has been regaling us with stories about his motorcycle adventures and told us his secret to conquering fears. In the second half of the show, Matthew's going to tell us what it's like being the general manager of a boutique hotel in New York City that's undergoing a top-to-bottom transformation. You think it's easy? Think again. Matthew, let's face it, as far as I'm concerned, from my perspective, your life is never dull. The hotel is going through a total makeover, and it presents a different kind of chaos. Let's talk about it.
Yes, well, hotel life is never dull between guests and building and staff and finances. But this is especially interesting, as this is a 1911 building, and I'm sure it was steam heat when it originally was built, and we're getting a full renovation. Originally, it was an 11-story building, with the 11th floor being the laboratory. So originally, it was the chemist club. So chemists came from all over the world, and they would stay there. And then they could rent space and work in a laboratory on the 11th floor. Additional floors were added in the 1990s when it became a hotel, and definitely needed upgrades.
Okay, so what kind of upgrades are you doing? And in doing so, what kind of chaos gets created?
So this has been a full renovation, and we have owners that are Spanish, so they love efficiency and they love quiet and also nice design. So it's been amazing because, you know, it's a steel and concrete building with a very old heating and cooling system. A new heating and cooling system was put in, new interior windows, all new hallways, top to bottom renovation.
And while you're doing all this, you have guests coming in and out. How are you keeping them happy?
Right. So basically a full renovation, and we kept the hotel open. And so they started on the top half, redid the top half of rooms, and the lobby became the loading dock, the construction area. The elevators, there are two. It was split into a bank of one for guests and one for construction, with a weird door built in between the two elevators. And then we had a temporary front desk on the third floor, which is where the conference room used to be. And that was great. And we did that until the conference room needed to be worked on. Then we moved it out into the hallway. Then the lower level was done. Then we moved the front desk to the 10th floor, which was a completed floor. So communication is really important. We definitely adjusted rates so that the traveler understood that if you're getting this good of a rate, there must be something. And of course, the something is renovation. And we understand the inconvenience, but also there's a lot of people that just want to be in New York, and some renovation stuff is not a deal breaker to them. And so we were busy the whole entire time.
You told me that your boss told you that you should expect some of the staff to quit during the renovations. I guess we should just talk about, just for a second, what your philosophy is about how to treat your staff.
I always feel you should run a healthy property, and I can't expect my staff to take good care of my guests if I'm yelling at them or mean or it's not a nice place to work. So, you know, my guest service is interior guest service to my staff.
Yes, it's not surprising given that you didn't have one staff member quit. But tell me how you felt. How did you do?
You know, I was upset when my boss had said that, because I have such a solid team and that we've worked together. I have almost no turnover. And so I was kind of upset thinking about that people would leave. And so then I paid extra attention to my staff as they were going through this. We know change is stressful. Even though it's exciting, yes, that's great. We're getting this beautiful new hotel. But to get it over the finish line, It's a lot of day-to-day inconvenience, to say the least. And so basically we made it through the renovation, and I was talking to my boss, and then there was just additional things that were coming up. I was feeling very burnt out. And so I said, look, do you remember when you said that we were going to lose staff during this renovation? He said, yeah. I said, and we didn't lose anybody? He said, yeah. I said, but now we are. I said, I'm quitting. I've had enough. I can't stand this. It's just change after change after change after change. And it's like it won't stop. And he started laughing. And I said, okay, that's my 3-minute rant. But I was surprised that he would tell me that some of my staff would be leaving. And then I was also surprised that at the end, I think it's me.
But you didn't really have any intention of leaving. You just had to get that off your chest.
No, right? For sure. Look, as a general manager, and this is really any leadership, you just don't get to vent or, you know, talk in a meaningful way to colleagues. And so he is a great man and a good colleague. And being able to share that with him in a humorous way felt great. And he understood it. And he knew it was important for me to be able to vent to him. You know, we take care of our own.
Yeah, that's great to have a boss like that. You know, you're touching on one of the most important things, I think. It's the bone of contention of humanity, which is fear of change. And
right.
Having a negative reaction to change, even here at the radio station, you know, we've gone through so many changes. And sometimes it's been rough because people don't like change. They want things to remain the same. And they really dig their heels in. And, you know, things can happen. How big is your staff, by the way?
12 people.
So you're managing 12 people, and you've got to keep them happy, and you've got to bring them along with the change while you bring yourself along with the change.
Right.
And it's really hard. Let's talk about some of the specific changes that were happening physically. I went on the website to look at what was going on, and even the front doors are completely different. In fact, I don't even think I saw the inner door because I don't think it had been delivered on time.
Right. So basically the lobby was done, and except that the old vestibule with the 1990s glass doors was still there. The vestibule that was to come was handmade, and they had not completed it yet. So we had all the nice new rooms and hallways, this fantastic gym. I mean, everything just gorgeous, and the lobby. And then they're like, well, we have to put in the vestibule, which required jackhammering 3 inches down into the cement floor 6 times to put in pivot points for the doors that were coming as part of this. And, you know, so now this beautiful lobby is covered in plastic, looked like a scene from Dexter or something. And just a nightmare.
Where were the guests coming in? They couldn't come in the front door.
Well, remember, the Benjamin Steakhouse is at the hotel. So they would come through the Benjamin entrance.
Not an auspicious beginning, but the Benjamin Steakhouse is very nice, let me just say.
That's great. They really are top notch.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine this, what it was like. The thing about the hotel, the change that I had a hard time when you told me was they were going to change the name. And I don't want to give it away yet. So before we talk about what the name change actually is, would you give like a little history? And you did in the first half, but for those who missed it in the first half, just a little history of the building itself so people can understand the true efficacy of this new name.
Right. So, the building was there. It was an empty lot. And it was an empty lot after Grand Central was created. And Morris Loeb, he was a German, kind of a rich kid from the Gilded Age. And he'd been to Germany, and there was I think they called it like a chemical house where scientists got together and could speak. And so he wanted to recreate that here. So he bought this lot and got benefactors to help get this all set up. He died of scarlet fever or something like that before it actually opened. The chemist club opened. And it was a men's club, of course, and it had a world-class library on the second and third floor, and it had a barber shop and dining and rooms for rent. And people rent them by the week. Big chemical companies would buy them by the floor so that their staff could come and travel and always have a place. The laboratory was on the 11th floor so that people could come and do their work while they were traveling as well. And that club continued up until the late 80s, I guess just early 90s. And then they sold the building.
You mean there were still chemists convening at this club? It was still a club for chemists up until the 1980?
Correct.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. So let's reveal what the new name of the hotel is.
Right. So it'll be the Chemist Club Hotel. Above the door, as you enter the building, it says Chemist Club. And it's always been there. Now it has Dylan below that, but that will go away and it'll be the Chemist Club Hotel. You know, there's such a great history, and, you know, Thomas Edison was at the opening dinner. Hazel Bishop was the lady that put lipstick in a tube. She was the first female member. So when I started there, it was kind of a tired hotel, but it had this great story. So I kept getting this story out, and people were really interested in it. And so guests would ask about it, and then we'd have guests that would come and stay. And this one lady was talking to front desk about something. They're like, hold on, you need to talk to our general manager, Matthew Dempsey. And so I went and met with her, and she's like, you know, I used to date a guy that worked for a chemical company, and he stayed here all the time. And he was so proud because he was selling secrets from one company to another. Like, I actually got to go up to his room. And of course, she said, you know, in the 70s, it was not, a lady was not allowed on the upper floors of a men's club.
Oh, but, right. So
a lot of good history and stories that keep coming out of this just by keeping things so vibrant.
Oh, my God. I love that. Thank you so much, Matthew, for joining me today and giving this really thorough history of the Chemist Club and also your motorcycle adventures. How can the listener get more information about the Chemist Club Hotel?
So right now you can Google the Dylan Hotel. That will have lots of good information. You can Google the Chemist Club. There will be the Chemist Club Hotel website. That's coming soon. So if you don't see it now, just keep checking back. That'll be there. And of course, if you'd like to come and stay, you can email me directly and I will help you.
Matthew, lots of luck with your travels. And I'm telling you, I can't wait to see the Chemist Club Hotel in all of its new glory. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Donna, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and Matthew Dempsey, resident of Hortonville, New York and New York City, and general manager of the new-to-come Chemist Club Hotel on 52 East 41st Street in New York City. You can read about the history of the hotel by Googling the Dylan Hotel. New website is coming soon. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except for the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs. Join us then for more exciting stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering four counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Some of President Trump's executive orders seem to contravene established law, leading journalists to ask, is this legal?
Because the president is not a king, these are letters of intent, but they don't have any binding legal force. And if we treat them as though they do, they're paralyzing.
On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Bill Gates on dinner at Mar-a-Lago.
President Trump, you know, is going to make a lot of policy decisions. And I would say the range of possibilities in many areas has never been as broad.
Bill Gates on the politics of technology in 2025, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.